ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
For Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, you are listening to the Tank Slappers podcast. And on this week's show, we're going to be looking back over a fantastic French Grand Prix in which Jorge Martin stamped his authority on the field and staked a pretty big claim to a potential factory Ducati seat in 2025. But you'll have tough competition if Marc Marquez's performances at Le Mans coming from 13th on the grid or anything to go by. We've got the 2027 regulations to talk about and all sorts of news, and to do that, as ever, joining myself, Lewis Duncan, is Oriol Puigdemont. And Yuri, welcome back to the podcast. And
thank you.
I mean, we're kind of sort of three in a row now of really fantastic races, and Le Mans, I think kind of going into it, a couple of the riders were a little bit, you know, I think Aleix Espargaró told the media, I don't expect anything from this race. It's going to be kind of a bit boring because of the aero, because of the layout of the track. It was anything but.
Yeah, I think that nothing of this matters anymore because since the beginning of this year, we've seen a completely different MotoGP races and even a completely different championship. So the nature of the races are no, let's say, boring anymore.
Yeah.
We have, I mean, and then every race, it gives us more and more and more and more. So let's see what happens in Montmeló. But let's talk about the Le Mans because it was an impressive race, especially from Martin and Marquez.
Yeah, I mean, just before we go into that, I mean, why do you think you know we are seeing these kind of more exciting races now? Because last year, you know, we saw a lot of. We did see quite a lot of boring races. There was a lot of struggles with overtaking. There was a lot of, you know, and the bikes haven't changed. If anything, the bikes have kind of gotten worse in terms of aero, in terms of that sort of stuff. Where's kind of, sort of, what's the difference maker? Is it the new tire construction? I mean, what's really the difference?
I would put under two names, Marc Márquez and Pedro Acosta.
Yeah.
So nothing has changed other than new kid on the block and one of the best riders ever joining a really competitive bike. So end of the story. And then because they have shaken the field, all the others had to react. And that's it. Of course, there are some limitations. You cannot expect Fabio Quartararo doing the same kind of comeback that Marquez did the other day. But even for him, was not a bad weekend.
No.
I mean, I think if I'm not wrong, he was running sixth when he crashed on Sunday's race. So I think it's under this, I would say that those two names, Marc Márquez and Pedro Acosta.
And that's totally fair enough, because for a good few years now, we've spoken a lot in this podcast and various other sort of chats, and you have always said that, you know, coming into each season, we'd really need to see Marc, you know, take that step, and, you know, Marc will be, once Marc's competitive again, it'll be much better for the championship, for the exposure, for everything. He is now competitive again, and, you know, and it is great for the championship. I don't care what anyone says, having a fit, healthy, fast Marc Marquez up the front in MotoGP is great.
I think he has solved all the question marks that he could possibly had on, yeah, on his head. Probably more question marks than a few of us, or many of us, even. So yeah, I think that he's convinced again that he can be fighting for wins, as he has demonstrated in the last races. So yeah, and I'm curious to see what he's gonna add to this year's championship, and if he will be able to be a title contender, despite being in a non-factory bike and in a, let's say, satellite team, non-factory supported.
Yeah, I mean, I think he said after the French Grand Prix that he feels like there's still a little bit of something missing to fight for the championship. But, I mean, you don't come from 13th on the grid twice, as he did at Le Mans, and finish second and fight for the win like that if you're not a championship contender. There's just...
I will make a risky statement now, but I would say that I didn't see that he missed anything on Sunday's race. Of course, somebody or even Mark can say, yes, but I know that the 2024... Desmosedici is a bit better here and there, and it makes a lot of difference, of course, and I have to agree because I don't know nothing about this stuff. But it's not, for example, in Qatar, we saw that he was missing some acceleration, yeah, and in the corner exits, and so here in Le Mans, at least in this specific track, I didn't see him in less in a bike with less potential than Martin or Pecco. So at least in this kind of tracks, I think that he can be as competitive as the other two. And don't forget that we've seen people like Enea Bastianini or Marco Bezzecchi winning with last year's bike. So, there's another thing about that. You don't hear Mark putting that as an excuse. He's never said that. He always says, this bike is the one that I got, and with this bike, I will compete at my maximum. So I think that's fair to say that, there's in at least in Le Mans, they all of them were fighting in almost, let's say, similar conditions.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, the only thing Mark missed was the qualifying. Qualifying in 13th was, you know, had he been a bit further forward in the field, that, you know, could have, I'm not going to say he would have definitely won the race had he been on the front row, but it would have made a big difference. However, you know, that qualifying kind of and the early part of that weekend did show that there's a couple of lessons that Grassini and Mark still need to learn in terms of the directions to go with bike set up to suit him, which they both openly admitted. But, you know, it's five races into this partnership. That's still to be expected. You know, I don't think you can criticize him really for that type of thing.
The thing is that he arrives here after 13 years with the same crew. And we are only five races into the new championship. So I think that they have shown a really, really good reaction in from Friday to Sunday, to Saturday afternoon and to Sunday as well. So I think they are in the right path. So they are still in this learning process. So I think Mark has, and also the team, they both have a margin to improve and to know better each other.
Yeah, 100%. I'll make a kind of, I don't think it's a controversial statement, but we obviously saw Mark fight for the win and hooray. I would say this weekend was a much more impressive ride and a much more impressive race from him, because Jerez is a circuit mark. No, everyone knows, you know, it's not really a kind of fair representation of the rest of the season. Le Mans has at times been a trickier track for Mark. And just the way he went about that whole weekend and the way he went about that race and that last lap overtake on Pecco Bagnaia especially, just kind of really was confirmation of what we saw in Jerez. Like, you know, he is here now. Like, there is no... The adaptation period is done. He is now fighting at the front of this field. And he, whatever he says, he is a championship contender.
Yeah, and I think we're going to have more of this in Montmeló, that is a track that he doesn't really enjoy it because it's mainly right-handed. But I think we will have more of this in Montmeló in 2 weeks' time. So I think he has arrived already, and you can see him. He's enjoying, he's laughing, he's making jokes, he's dancing. Yeah. So we have the best version of Mark. So yeah, it's the best news for the championship.
It's the scariest version of Mark, surely, for his rivals, because obviously we've never really seen him be this relaxed. I know there's obviously a lot of, there's that 4 years of history of things being so terrible that must obviously this is now a release for him, but...
Yeah, but yeah. Nobody, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not that nobody expects him to be fighting for the title, but given the circumstances that he's in a satellite team, yeah, and not in the first satellite Ducati, and not in the first Ducati satellite team, but probably in the, don't get me wrong, but in the most humble Ducati satellite team, and with the last year's bike, which means that he doesn't have access to the latest specification of the bike, so I mean, he wouldn't have to be a title contender. He shouldn't be a title contender. If we say that he will probably be a title contender, it's because of him. But he can say, I have no pressure because I don't have to fight for the title.
Yeah.
If I'm there, of course I will go full on. But he doesn't have the obligation of fighting for the title. And that's why, in my opinion, he's super relaxed and also super happy because as I said before, because the question marks that he had on his head are not there anymore. So he knows that it was not him. It was the bike. So now he can go full on and he will make more steps. And then, yeah, as you say, I think he will be, at some point, he will be very scary for, scary. Yeah, very difficult to beat, let's put it this way.
Yeah, it's for someone who's as a beast as Mark is on the track, he's maybe the least kind of scariest person to speak to. But it's interesting you say that, because I remember at the start of this year, Jorge Martin was said to Spanish television, I think, to Dazón, that if he beats Marc Márquez, he can be considered one of the best riders in history. It's because of those factors that you've just mentioned that kind of makes that statement a little bit redundant. And do you feel like there's kind of more pressure on Martin? Remove, obviously, the 2025 thing out of the equation. Do you think Martin has more pressure now because Mark's now in the situation that maybe he was last year, but obviously with a bike disadvantage?
To be honest, I would say that who is more under pressure is Ducati by having to take that decision. Because, I mean, Martin, as he repeats, he has nothing to prove. I mean, in my opinion, of course, Mark is in the same field or the same level. He has nothing to prove, even less, because he's six times MotoGP champion. But, I mean, Martin, at this point, he has nothing to prove. He was really close to win the title last year in a satellite team. He's leading the championship with more than a race gap in his advantage. So, and now he's performing so good in the most crucial, probably, time of the year when Ducati is evaluating who's going to be Pecco's teammate next year. So I think that he has shown that, he said again, I have nothing to prove. Mm-hmm. This is, if somebody needs to understand something, this is my statement. Mm-hmm. Enough. If Ducati doesn't want me in the factory team, I will find myself somewhere else in a factory that really shows that, wants me.
Yeah, for sure. And if there was anything left to prove, he proved it at Le Mans with arguably the best weekend he's ever put together in MotoGP. From the off, he was fast. Qualifying was amazing. And the way he rode both of those, and particularly the Grand Prix as well, was just so intelligent. As much as it was a display of skill, it was a really intelligent ride from Jorge Martin. And, he's really capitalizing on, Bagnaia's struggles, on Mark's kind of
adaptation. It was not easy for him to keep the pace there, to being in front, but having both beasts, Pecco and Marquez, so close to him.
Yeah.
So my only question mark is, would Pecco have tried to overtake him if Mark wouldn't have made it with him? We don't know. We will never know. But Martin made the perfect weekend, in my opinion.
Yeah, and his season's been great. Just to go back to that, now that we have these two races, we're going to get to look at sort of, the metric of points, kind of an average point sort of scoring, and Martin's on a ridiculous average of about 26 points per race, which is a Grand Prix victory every single weekend. Bagnaia, for example, is on around 18, and Mark's now just at 18 points as well, which, if you kind of isolate those three riders, Pecco's the one that's kind of underperforming right now. Yes, he had a great Grand Prix in Jerez, and there was the problems in the sprint race, but you have to feel that a lot of those problems he had at Le Mans started with that qualifying crash. Had he not done that, he wouldn't have missed that time in the sprint race with a bike problem, and then maybe the Grand Prix would have went different.
Yes, but this kind of problem shouldn't happen, because Martin also crashed and it didn't happen to him. So, I think that Pecco is there and will be there, and he's, don't forget that he's the second of the stats at the moment. So and we just have 5 Grand Prix on the pocket. So I think it's still too early, when he really starts being consistent, I think, in Le Mans he had the chance to, because after Jerez Grand Prix there was a test on Monday, and he was super happy about that day. So I think they have found something. Mm-hmm. And the problem was that he was not able to capitalize that, especially on the sprint race. But I think that we will see a more consistent version of Pecco in the next races.
I hope so, because he does need to start. Yes, it's a long championship, but 38 point gap is quite big, and he's only got Mark and Bastianini at 2 points behind him, so there is a little bit of pressure on him there. I'm going to put you on the spot, because obviously the big kind of question everyone has is, who does Ducati pick next year to partner Bagnaia? Jorge Martin, as you've mentioned, has made his case. He can do no more. Gigi Deligny has already said that they will kind of look at the rider's history as well as what they've done this year. So from that statement, you kind of have to then put Mark as favourite. What do they do? Because Ducati would be silly not to give Marc Marquez a factory bike, because it's Marc Marquez. The marketing that comes from that, the fact that he is Marc Marquez and will ride the bike incredibly, is there, but then you would let Jorge Martin walk away. But is Martin a trade-off for Marc Marquez? How, you know, that's this is the thing that Ducati really has a struggle on their hands with.
The way I see it is, despite the Ducati is making a really loud soap opera of all this thing. Mm-hmm. If you put it in a, maybe I'm going to invent that word, a pragmatic way.
No, that's a real word you've got.
Okay,
you've nailed
that's
that.
Good. So if you put it, if you see at the scenario in a pragmatic way,
yeah.
In my opinion, maybe I'm wrong, but the way I see it is that if Ducati wants to keep both Marc and Jorge, there's only one formula, which means you need to put Martin on red on the factory bike and give Marc a factory bike in a satellite team. Because Martin has already said many times that is either dressing on red or leaving Ducati. So if you look at this in a pragmatic way, the only way that Ducati can keep both riders is putting this. Because Martin will not accept being in a satellite team again, despite having a factory bike, because he has a factory bike now. And Marc can accept that, or will have to accept that, because again, for Marc, what's the alternative? Going to KTM, gas or whatever? I mean, having to understand and to adapt himself to a new bike again, a new bike that, you see that KTM is there with Acosta at some point, but some other races is not there. Mm-hmm. Aprilia, exactly the same. Yeah. The only bike that is there on top all the time is a Ducati. So I don't see Marc really keen to start the process again of learning the bike, new team. So in my opinion, the most intelligent and the only way to keep both Martin and Marquez is putting Martin in the factory team and giving Marquez a factory bike in a satellite team. Mm-hmm. Let's say Pramac, for example.
Well, this was my next point is how much of this kind of revolves around Pramac? Because we know that they're in talks with Yamaha. We know that there is a certain cutoff point that there's going to be an auto renewal with Ducati that would guarantee them the factory bikes for next year and no one else. How much of this kind of hinges on what Pramac decides? Because also, would Marc like to go to Pramac? Would he prefer to have a factory bike and stay at Gresini, given that the atmosphere he's found there?
Yeah, but the problem is that if Pramac renews the contract, they are keeping both factory bikes next year because they have signed this bike contract. It's mm-hmm. just a renewal, automatic. So it's an automatic renewal. So they would keep the same kind of support from factory, different amount of rider salary, that's for sure. And that might be the key. Mm-hmm. So of course, Marc would prefer to dress on red and in a factory team. But if that's not possible, his priority is to have a factory bike. And if Pramac decides to renew Ducati, Pramac will be the only team with two factory bikes next year. Mm-hmm. And also 2026.
Yeah.
If decide to renew the contract.
Mm-hmm. There's an
At
element-
the moment, sorry about that. At the moment, they, in my opinion, they are waiting to know or to see or to understand who the second rider might be. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's not the same having Fermín Aldeguer, with all due respect, and Franco Morbidelli than having Fermín Aldeguer and Marc Márquez.
I was just about to kind of make the point there that perhaps Ducati sees quite a good opportunity there to have Aldeguer, who obviously is a very good talent and they can think can be a future Ducati kind of prospect, you know, alongside Marc Márquez. That's a great learning opportunity for Fermín Aldeguer.
Of course it is. I mean, they would sign it yesterday. They would have signed it yesterday, but it's not always easy because Marc is pushing for his targets and it's not always easy. I mean, don't forget that he is not getting any money from Ducati. Mm-hmm. So it's not always easy to try to arrange everything and to set up a machinery that is so complex. Because, by signing with Pramac, it means that he won't have a super huge salary. Mm-hmm. So it's not the same. Of course, he's pushing, and it's not easy.
Yeah. Well, this is the other thing that I guess Marc has on his side is that he doesn't need the money as such. He's got the sponsor money coming in. He just wants to win.
Yeah. Okay. He doesn't need the money, but don't forget that there's been. I mean, this year he's raced almost for free. I mean, for his earning, of course, his personal sponsors, but from the team. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not getting because Gresini doesn't have any, let's say, significant money to pay Marc Márquez. I mean, don't get me, you know. I mean, it would be. Let's put it this way. Marc has decided to leave Honda, and a contract letting him earn around 20 million, and maybe now is earning 1 million. So it means mm-hmm. that he's lost 19. Mm-hmm. Not that he's earning one.
I hope his gas and electricity bills aren't too high then in that case. But the thing with Marc going to Pramac as well, there's obviously been this kind of one bit of discussion about if he goes to the factory team is he would have to leave Red Bull, which has obviously been a big, quite important sponsor. Going to Pramac would allow that relationship to continue. We've obviously Martins and Zarco before have had Red Bull contracts. So, you know, would that be a consideration for Marc as well?
I mean, all of this might be into the consideration. I mean, I think it was in Jerez on Thursday. I was there, and he told us that Pramac is a good team, but a satellite team.
Yeah,
it's not a factory team. And after Le Mans, they asked them again. I was not there, but Germán was, our colleague, and they asked Marc again about Red Bull, specifically about Red Bull, and he said, "Well, in life, there are some times that you need to." Take painful decisions. So he gave us the answer already.
Yeah. Looking just a couple other things of that race before we move on. Pedro Acosta, first real kind of hard lesson for Pedro. You know, we've not seen him make too many mistakes, and this was kind of the first big one. And you can see after that the sort of change in expectations from him, because he told the media the potential of that bike was for something really quite special on Sunday. It's an interesting how he's gone from, you know, oh, I need to be happy to make mistakes to, you know, this mistake really hurts. I mean, it shows the quite quick growth of this 19-year-old.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't want to people see him as a rookie anymore. So that's why he took it in the hard way, the mistake. And
which is good to see, I think.
Yeah. And he was close to ruin also Aleix and I think it was the San Antonio race in one shot. So in one strike. So yeah, I think that he has, as you said, it was the first big lesson for him. It was the first race without getting any points. So sooner or later, he needed to go through this process. And I think it will make him grow and grow. And I think even this Christ, I mean, what we've seen from him this year and what we are seeing from him and what we're going to see from him, it's a pleasure and it's outstanding.
Mm. I mean, even before that crash, the whole weekend, he was really just the better KTM. And what was quite a bad weekend for the Austrian manufacturer. I mean, Jack Miller had his problems. Binder obviously qualified last with, you know, various issues in qualifying. Once again, we're seeing Pedro really kind of just get more out of this bike, which is, you know, must start to kind of be worrying KTM a little bit that they've got some good riders on those bikes, and yet this rookie has just taken, it's really, really taken a big step in front of them.
Well, but that's what the aliens are here for. We've seen that with Mark in the past. We've seen that with Valentino. We've seen that with Danny. We've seen that with Jorge. So, I mean, you only have you only get the right level of your people when you can compare them with this kind of phenomenons.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. I mean, you can talk about the bike, you can talk, but they are, all of them, they are racing with the same bike. And if you speak to them, they say, no, what this kid is doing, it's, I can only imagine myself doing this.
Yeah.
So I can only dream myself doing this, which is what Miller said at some point this year.
Yeah.
I mean, what else can we say? I mean, the bike is getting better. And now they have a proper alien riding that bike. So
yeah.
I'm not saying that Brad Binder is not a really a super good rider, but I mean, what else can you say?
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. It's the kind of aspirations that only Honda can dream of right now, because I mean, we've talked about Honda a lot this year, but the Le Mans weekend was just bleak, I think, has to be the only word. Luca Marini was 40 seconds off the pace. Joan Mir crashed twice. You know, Zarco was the best rider in 12th there, and that's, you know, a few people crashed in front of him, and he was still over 25 seconds off the win. I mean, when you're looking at, like, kind of Fabio Quartararo and Yamaha make a little bit of a step, I mean, Honda just are going nowhere.
I mean, they will be there forever if they don't change their approach. Honda will be there forever if the Japanese crew don't change the approach and really do what all of the non-Japanese people in Honda tell them that they need to do.
Yeah.
If they don't want it, okay, they will be there forever. It's, in the end, it's their choice.
Yeah.
So I don't, to be honest, yeah, I'm sad for the people that I know there. But I don't even bother myself talking about the same thing, yeah, because you can get this sentence,
yeah,
and put it here in Jerez, in Austin, yeah, in, so because they are doing the same. So by doing the same, and they are surprised that they have the same outcome by doing the same. No, I mean, if you want to do something, if you want to get more, you need to do something different. They are not doing anything different. Okay. Follow the same route.
Yeah, and there's one rider I want to highlight in particular, because you know, I don't make a habit of feeling sorry for MotoGP riders, but I do actually for this one, and it's Joan Mir. I mean, you listen to the other Honda riders and the way they talk about Mir, they say Mir's really good at, you know, bringing the most pace out of this bike, and but you listen to Mir talk about the season, and he's told the Spanish media over the Le Mans weekend that he doesn't know how much longer his body can put up with the stresses and strains that this Honda project is doing. I mean, I hope Mir finds an alternate ride next year, because Honda doesn't deserve a rider like that with the way this project is right now.
I don't see this happening.
You don't see Mir leaving?
I don't see Mir going anywhere else. So I think that Mir has a lot of chances of staying at home next year.
Okay, that's quite depressing actually, because
I mean, you know, he's not the kind of rider that is gonna Dagger himself, or
danger.
He's not gonna put himself in a, let's say, in a satellite. So he's not gonna be racing there just for racing. He wants to be there for trying to achieve something important. So I don't see himself. I don't see Mir signing for a small satellite team, getting a really small salary just for being there. No way. I mean it would surprise me if he does this. So I think that he has a lot of chances of retiring, but it's just my feeling. Maybe I'm wrong, and we can have a surprise. But I mean, and at the same point, I mean, that's Joan's or what I believe, that it's Joan's perspectives. But at the same time, who would sign him? Because there's also the big question mark.
Yeah.
About him.
Yeah, but no,
same as Marini. I mean, Marini has probably ruined his career by signing for Honda.
I think what we've seen
then
is
he has signed 2 years. Okay, yeah. He has 2 years. Let's see how and where he ends up.
With all due respect, though, I mean, for Marini, I mean, what we're seeing, I think, this season with Marini, yes, the bike is very bad, but what we're seeing here is that Luca Marini isn't good enough to be a factory rider. Even on a bad bike, you can't finish 40 seconds off a win. That's insanely bad.
Yeah, but
I know I'm saying that sat on a desk chair, you know, not riding a motorbike, but you know, like that. I mean, but what does Honda do in this situation if it loses a world champion because he feels retiring is better than racing for a satellite team? If its biggest star is Luca Marini, who isn't gonna become a world champion on that bike. Zarco's obviously kind of reaching more towards the end of his career, you know, and obviously Nakagami is just, again, without sounding disrespectful, Nakagami is just there. Like he's not really doing anything. He's just there because that side of the garage is set up for a Japanese rider, and of which there are no alternatives. Is there a situation here where Honda decide that even before the 2027 regulations?
Yeah, but this is Honda at the moment.
Is there a point where Honda get to 2027? Do they just decide this project's done?
As far as I know, Honda, and as far as some people inside Honda try to make me understand, is that Honda is an R&D company. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, they sell bikes, they sell cars, they sell engines for, I don't know, going to the space, but they are an R&D company. So it's a very difficult for me. It's very difficult to understand the way they operate and the way they think, especially in MotoGP. But I mean, they don't look worried about this, because otherwise they would have done different. So maybe they are testing some stuff and they have some data. They are collecting data, and maybe in 2027 they will put a rocket on the grid. I don't know, but what is true is that they are following their philosophy. They are not changing, and they, as far as I know, they won't change, because there are a lot of desperate people inside that garage.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, if you live by the sword, et cetera, et cetera. We mentioned 2027, and we'll end there on that, because we didn't get a chance to discuss those regulations when they were announced. Obviously, we've known for a while that the 850cc engines was going to be the direction, less aero, no ride height devices. I mean, do you, you're kind of sort of a opinion on the whole thing. Do the rules go far enough, and you know, in terms of aerodynamics, or is this a good move for the championship? Do you think, you know, do you agree with some of the complaints that maybe MotoGP should be getting quicker? You know, where do you stand on the whole thing?
I think that now I agree that the spectator don't really care if the bikes are 2 or 3 seconds slower.
Mm.
I mean, I agree 100%. I mean, what's that for? I mean, being 3 seconds faster, 5 seconds faster. And it's something that it was needed to make the bikes slower so they can keep improving. So now you have a new mark of regulation. So now the engineers will be focused on trying to make those first 850 CC bikes faster and faster and faster. So I think they will reach a point where the bikes will be even faster than what are at the moment. But maybe in 5 years, or I mean, you know. But I mean, that's a natural way, and the bikes are too fast at the moment for this kind of racetracks, with limitations on the runoff areas and so. So it was absolutely needed, and also now they will have the chance to remove a few of the, let's say, devices that are making these bikes the ugliest ever.
They are bad. The ride height device thing is good as well, because it means we're going to see the good riders make the difference now. Not that the grid is full of bad riders, but you know what I mean. We're going to see people, you know, the really great riders take profit. People like Pedro Acosta, for example, will thrive on a 2027 bike.
I think Aleix, as he always is, was very right on the point when he said that with this level of technology that we have now at the moment, the bikes don't make mistakes. So it's very difficult to ride in a corner exit and make a mistake. Most of the bikes do the same. So that's why the field is so tight. The differences are so tight. With less, let's say, help, we will hopefully see more difference between riders. So it's...
Yeah.
On paper, it sounds simple.
And the last question, because I get this is the big one around these rules. Do you see any new manufacturers looking at 2027 as being a good entry point for them? I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of talk about BMW, for example.
Yeah, I think BMW is the one that is the most interested one. I think that we've had quotes from the top management saying that they are interested on, they are thinking on, they are studying, they are planning. I think it's the first step. I mean, the minute the management starts talking about that in this specific way, it means that there's been some work done behind the scenes.
Yeah, 100%. Yuri, thank you very much for your company, as always.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for joining us. If you like what you heard, you can go and catch all of our other podcasts on all your various podcast platforms. And obviously keep reading autosport.com and motorsport.com for all the latest MotoGP news, features, you know, race reports, etc., etc. We'll be back next week to preview the Catalan Grand Prix. But until then, it's a very warm goodbye. And thank you very much for listening.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.